So one of the harder things to do as a historian, when you're trying to explain things that once happened, is when that thing that happened happened rarely in the past and now happens all the time. You'd think that'd make it easier, but it doesn't, because people now just consider it part of the landscape, a natural thing that happens. They then can't really imagine a time that it was rare or it was precious. So in this case, I'm actually talking about multi-party teleconferencing. In today's world, you can just start up a conference with a bunch of people, usually for free. You can put them all in the same voice line and talk. It's something we do during video games. It's something we do at the office. It just happens. But when I was young, when I was in my early teens, it was absolutely the holy grail. My name's Jason Scott. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, Episode 2. The history of when we first could do multi-party teleconferencing is a little bit murky. It wasn't a product until something like the 1950s, and from there on it was the province of usually business. It was something that was very expensive, and so it was both available and really unavailable. But it is known that as soon as switching equipment came into play in the phone system, that sometimes repair people would set up the switches to allow you to call a certain phone line, and there would be a bridge that would bridge other phone lines. And as people called in to the other phone lines, they could all talk together. This was done primarily as a way to do diagnostics, but of course, people are people, and we don't know what those first conversations were. They're absolutely lost to time. Over the years, though, phone freaks, people who were really into the telephone system, which was this beautiful monolithic computer that spanned the globe, they figured out ways to get onto these bridges or even cause ones for themselves, and they would have teleconferences. And this was all happening in the 1960s, 1970s. When bulletin board systems took over as places of communication, a lot of the information that had been learned through phone freaking kind of washed up on the shore of the bulletin board. And when these text files were being written, many of the early ones are variations of either handwritten newsletters about phone freaking or transcribed telephone information that's being provided to learn new tricks or cause really illegal tricks. I was definitely one of the people who would collect these old text files, and a lot of them are called box files, where you would hook a box up to a phone, and then you could do something unusual. Not pay for a phone call, forward your phone call to another phone line, and so on. But the thing is that that telephone culture, that culture of being on the phone, is something that has faded in and out here in the last half of the 20th and the beginning of the 21st centuries. We used to have it that the phone was the way to reach somebody at their home remotely. You would call it, and a person would answer, and you would talk to them. After a while, we made machines that could answer the phone for you, and things got a little different for a while. Then we came to computers, and with computers, you didn't have to talk to anybody. But yet, there was a strong phone voice component. You'd call up a bulletin board system and perhaps get a call back from the operator to verify who you were. Voice validation was what it was called. So people had a way of using the phone that's kind of lost again. Even in the cell phone world, we're not really inclined to pick up the cell phone. It's probably a weird call if it's coming through over voice instead of on your computer in an email. So in this realm of voice calls and people talking on the phone along with computers, you get this very strange breed of teenager who sounds older on the phone and has a better character about themselves and has an amazing ability to social engineer their ways into places that no civilian, no customer is ever supposed to be. And I was lucky to know a few people like this. But phones were expensive. This is something that's completely lost to the modern era. But the idea of the telephone local calling area, where your exchange dictated which other exchanges you could connect to for a certain amount of money, and then other exchanges that would cost even more, and then area codes in which you could find yourself hundreds of dollars in debt from a single month of phone calls, especially with a computer that hooked up for hours on end. Every kid who used bulletin boards obsessively in the 1980s has that one terrifying memory that they've suppressed of when your parents got the largest phone bill they had ever seen in their lives. You know, a phone bill that would normally go between $14 and $28, suddenly skyrocketing to $200, $300, $400 in a single month. And then that talking to where they said, "This isn't going to happen again, is it?" And the kid would say, truthfully, "Of course it's not." We get then into phone codes and using places like MCI and Sprint and calling card numbers to not have to pay, not because somebody's trying to steal, but simply because they are so addicted to being online that they don't want to walk away from it, but they don't want to pay the hundreds of dollars. Another weird skill that came out of all this is the ability to hear an area code and know where it was from, because you had to make those calculations related to your bill or to knowing what time it was. It's a weird side effect that I knew for years that 312 was Chicago, 212 was New York, and I knew that 617 was Boston, and I could tell you that 503 was Oregon, and go all the way down the line. It's just something you had to pick up to be able to walk through this expensive financial nightmare. It's still very hard for me to reconcile that the area code and the exchange on a telephone number has absolutely no bearing on its cost anymore, and it really doesn't matter who's calling you from where or where you're calling within the continent of the United States. But like everything, we get used to it. We don't think of it that way anymore. Pulling it back then to telephone conferences. If you like talking to people and you liked communicating with people online, you might be really enticed by the idea that there was a phone number you could call or a call that you would receive, and on it would be more than one person. I mean, it was interesting to talk to a person who wasn't in the same state as you or had different ideas than you, but the idea of connecting to a party, they were amazing parties, audio only, where people would connect and stay on for hours and hours. They would play each other music. They would talk about what they were doing, and they wouldn't walk away from it. You know what I'm saying? They would just be on the phone until your ear sweated out and you switched out to another ear, or you fell asleep for a while and you woke back up again. It's a very standard memory to have somebody snoring being one of the people on the line with you. We would have these calls, and they would last all night until the rays of the morning came. Now, unlike the online world, where there was an economy of posting new information or getting your hands on the newest programs that you had either copied yourself or gotten from other locations, the economy on the phone line was a little bit different. It was definitely one of performance. It really didn't matter what age you were, as long as you gave a good audio show. As long as you were a good conversationalist, or you had an interesting voice, or you came up with really good ideas, or you turned the conversation towards pranking or causing trouble with other phone lines out around the world, it was a completely different way of interacting with people. And I like to think that the skills I learned there I have parlayed into other arenas, working in radio, doing performances and presentations, and everything else with my voice. A lot of these have been lost to time for me. On textfiles.com, specifically audio.textfiles.com, there's some recordings of conferences, some that I made myself and some that others have made, that give you a real sense for how these things could go. They're interesting and weird, and I will tell you that it's sometimes 20 and 30 plus years since the recordings. So the things they're talking about, the phrases they're using are a little bit different, but you can really sense the fun party atmosphere that would come through on these conferences. I do remember one conference, though, that was just absolutely amazing. And in this one, I was at my father's house and a phone call came to me because they knew I could be reached there. And it was later in the evening and my father was going to bed. And I picked it up and I found out that there was a bunch of people on the line, which told me that it was going to be an amazing night. The guy who was running it had a whole bunch of phone numbers on a list ready to go. And not all of these numbers were in the U.S., so that was special. I remember at one point we called up a bunch of phone numbers that were in the classifieds in England, and it was ads for people who wanted to start a band or were looking to sell something, and we would call them up, and we'd get somebody, and they had a different accent. And we'd say things to them and ask them questions, and I'm sure for them it was this weird experience to be descended upon by a bunch of shouting voices that were American, by the dozen that were completely enthralled with the most basic answers that they were given because they were the most amazing answers in that accent. I remember at one point we called a musician, and that musician's answering machine picked up. Now you've got a problem. Some answering machines allowed you to press a button and cause the tone to turn off the answering machine, but this wasn't one of those. So it was running and running, and whatever the guy had set, there was no maximum time. So after about 10 minutes of forgetting about the guy and talking, one of us said, I feel like the answering machine's still on the line. And the guy who ran the call said, great, hey, dude, I'm really sorry. If you got a problem, come on over to America and we'll talk about it. And we let it go. So maybe that guy kept that weird little artifact all this time. But we called Israel, we called France, we called Germany, we called all around the United States. And I remember my father coming into the room while it was really light out and asking me what I was up to. And that was the end of my time on the phone call. But considering how long the call had been going on before me, I think in total it was something like 13 hours. Now let's talk about the real cost there. The best way to do teleconferencing back in the early 1980s was to use a company called Alliance Teleconference. And the phone number was 0700 and then multiple exchanges for whichever city you were in. And Alliance Teleconference was expensive. It was $1 per line per minute. If that sounds insane, it is insane. Work that out. 10 people on the line for 1 hour, that's $10 per minute for 60 minutes, $600 for a phone call of 1 hour. I assume that people were paying this. I assume it was businesses. I can't imagine regular people thinking this is a good service, which is what I meant about it all being the province of people who could have it all reimbursed by some government or business entity. This was a real special thing to all of us to be able to touch it. And since the knowledge is not going to hurt or help anybody, I figure I might as well tell you, how do you get a free Alliance teleconference? Here's how it works. Let's talk about call forwarding and how it used to happen. Obviously, now we have a whole bunch of systems in place where you can say things like, if you call this number between these hours, please call this number instead, or do not disturb me, go right to voicemail, or change it up for these days. You know, the possibilities are endless with something like a Google Voice number or even most of your phone companies now. But back then, there wasn't any sort of service being sold for call forwarding or for tracking down where the number should go based on the time or anything like that. So there were companies that sold small boxes. And the way these boxes would work is that you would call in and the box would pick up. Then the box would call the number that was assigned to it to get to the real person. The people who use this would be places like real estate agents, lawyers, medical doctors, anybody who had after-hours calls but didn't have to sit in the office to take them. Remember, no cell phones, no mobile phones. It's landline to landline. A lot of these forwarding boxes, also known as green boxes, had a bug. Here's the bug. When you called, it would pick up a second phone line. So the box was actually two phone lines. You'd call up on line one, then the box would pick up, it would call the second number on the second line, and then the person would pick up on their home phone line or wherever they were located. Make sense? Once again, phone line calls other phone line and is picked up by third phone line. So you'd call the number, you'd hear a click click, there'd be a ringing, the person would pick up. Now you say nothing, or you say that there's a wrong number, and the other person hangs up. The way the box worked is that it wasn't always smart in knowing that the person was no longer there. So what would happen is when the lawyer or the doctor or the dentist would hang up, their phone line, the second phone line, would click back to a dial tone. So now you're calling in through line one and you're listening to line two's dial tone. Now the world is at your feet. You can call anywhere in the world on that phone line and it will be charged to the second phone, not yours. If you were smart, you did this from a payphone. Mostly because if you screwed up and didn't get it right, you were actually dialing on your own line and you thought you were dialing on that second phone line. But also, a little dumb to be doing stuff from your house. You know, the general rule was don't do it from your house. People would do it from their house. They'd learn why. Anyway, people got smart about this. The machines got smarter, or people would have special phone lines that were only really approved to call one phone number or a small set of phone numbers. But for a while, that little bug ensured teleconferences like you wouldn't believe. Now, how do you deal with the moral and ethical problems if you just caused another human being the pain of learning about a $1,000 phone bill or a multi-$1,000 phone bill? Well, the answer is you don't. You're young. You talk yourself into thinking that maybe this person will just have to make a simple call and say it wasn't mine, it wasn't me. I didn't call up 12 people across the world for hours. But, you know, never really worked that out, did we? One time I did have to work it out. Here's how that happened. So one day I pick up the phone and it's a teleconference. Oh man, this is going to be a great night. And at that time, I was really lucky. I had a phone line in my room that was my own phone line. The reason for this was because my father, working for IBM, was using a computer system that had something called the Guardian on it. The Guardian system was a really interesting authentication mechanism where you would call into an IBM number, and then you would type in your username and password, and then it would hang up on you, and then it would call the phone that was assigned to that username and password and give a carrier, and then your machine would connect to that phone. What that meant was the person not only had to know the username and password, but they had to be calling from that phone. It was a really expensive but really effective authentication mechanism. So we had one of those phones in the house. It was an IBM phone. It was paid for by IBM. And it was a phone that people could call me on because if we weren't using the computer, I could answer the phone. So I got a phone call on that line like I often did. It was a conference. We had a wonderful time. It went on for hours and hours. We called dozens of people. I remember at one point we were looking up weird names in the phone book, in the yellow pages. And there was a salad company in New York called Blazing Salads. And we could not get over that name, Blazing Salads. And it was about 9 or 10 at night, and we called up, and someone picked up. And we're like, is this really Blazing Salads? And he's like, yes, it is. And we were trying to explain to him what we were, and he sort of got it. And it was the end of the shift for him. And he's like, well, you're just stopping me from cleaning up this dump. So, hey, what's going on with you guys? We talked to the Blazing Salads guy for like an hour. You know, I don't know how often people in the modern era would be calling up random pun-named food locations and asking them what's up, but that's what we did for fun. These phone calls went on into the night. We talked to a bunch of people in California, and, you know, as the time shifted and it got later, we found more and more friends to talk to on the West Coast. And this was all being done through some sort of mechanism that was similar to what I described. And it was all going through Alliance Teleconference. And at some point, we hung up. We said goodnight. And that was the end of it. About a month and a half later, I get a phone call. On the 4221 line, on that line from IBM. That was pretty interesting. And it was a woman whose name has been lost to time. I'm just going to call her Alice. And Alice was not happy. She wasn't enraged, but she wasn't happy. Somebody had called Alice's forwarding box and, in some magical method, had then launched into some sort of teleconference. And the teleconference bill was $4,500. Alice was not happy at all. And as she explained to me, I was the second person who had been called. In other words, the person had called in, they had started the conference, and then whoever it was called me first. So that was pretty suspicious to Alice. And Alice wanted to know a little bit more about me. Alice was confused because she had looked up the phone number and wasn't a person. It was a company. It was IBM Corporation, Armonk. And here was this kid answering, this 16-year-old kid, this high schooler kid who was having none of having his docs dropped. So she kept asking me my name, and I kept deferring. And she kept asking me, did I know who did this? And I said, no, people call me all the time. I've got no idea. And she asked me, did I know it was costing so much money? And I said, no, not really. I just thought the phone was free. And she and I had a really interesting conversation. A lot of it was about the philosophy of security and the philosophy of, oh, did I mention that Alice was working for ADT, the security company? Yeah, so we had cost the security company something like $4,500. And of course she was contesting the bill, but she was still trying to nail down who this kid was. We talked about security, about the philosophy and ethics of providing a security service, and I remember we had a discussion of what deadly force was, and throughout the time, throughout this what really was an interrogation, she would pepper it with things like, oh yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're involved in this stuff at your school. What school was that? And I'd say, oh, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I should discuss that school. They're not, you know, they wouldn't be proud of me. This cat and mouse game went on for something like an hour. And then she, you know, wished me a good night and hung up. And she called back again, you know, like a week or two later, just to see, you know, would my father pick up? Would a parent pick up? Would somebody other than me pick up? Could we figure out who this was? And she talked to me a little more. And Alice and I talked, I think, two or three more times. Just a young kid and a security specialist talking about, what kind of world is it where this happens? Eventually, Alice gave up. She disappeared. That was the end of it. And I'm still fascinated at this conversation that was going on. And now, as time has kind of passed, I was in a situation where I was hacked. The Sockington account was hacked, and they attempted to sell the Sockington Twitter account, which had 1 million followers on it. But I ended up having their other accounts shut off. And we actually talked on Skype. They gave me a Skype account to call, and we talked about the ethics of hacking. And we talked about, was this a good idea? And was it a good idea to try to sell accounts you had hacked? And I realized that I had traveled the path, and I was now Alice. And it felt kind of weird. As time went on, that interesting teleconferencing company kind of faded away. I have a lot of trouble finding out whatever happened to Alliance Teleconference, but I'm sure they're a subsidiary of a subsidiary of a subsidiary these days. But we also lost that interest in multi-party conversations being anything special. You can have a multi-party conversation in 10 seconds today. You can fire up any number of clients and find yourself right in the middle of one with absolutely no ramp up, no fear, no concern, no amazement. It just happens. And I think we've lost something for that. I think that we've lost that performance aspect that a teleconference used to bring. And I treasure all the time that I spent on those things. Oh, and one other fact. About 8 months after Alice and I last talked, I remember I got dropped off by the school bus and I was walking down to my house and I always check the mail. Always something interesting. And inside of that mailbox was a brochure addressed to me, my real name, at my home address. And it was from ADT telling me about their services. I consider that a little tip of the hat from Alice, just to let me know that half a year later, I knew exactly who you are, you son of a bitch. Thanks for listening to episode 2 of Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. This podcast is related to raising money through a Patreon. You can reach that at patreon.com/textfiles. I'm on Twitter as textfiles, and I have textfiles.com. A special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters, but especially to Sam Johnston, Sebastian, Kevin Waters, and James Bay Koyanu for giving more than $50 per episode. That's very appreciated. This is a weekly podcast. I'll tell you more stories next week.